you have an adopted child or several adopted children? Question for you. What would be helpful for you in your adoptive parenting journey? Do you feel alone? Do you feel isolated? Or maybe you're thinking about adopting. Today at the Radio Backyard Fence, help and hope for parents who really want to connect with that adopted son or daughter, who really want to love well, but you have a challenge in your life to do that, and you're struggling in some area, and you feel like maybe you feel like a failure as a parent because you don't know what to do. You had one vision of how the adoption and the relationship would go, but what you thought would happen is different than what you found. Dr. Laurel Shaler is our guest today. She's teamed up with Dr. Gary Chapman on a new resource I think is going to help a lot of adoptive parents. We'll talk about it straight ahead on Chris Fabry Live. Welcome to the continuing conversation at the Radio Backyard Fence. Let me thank our team, Ryan McConaughey doing all things technical. Trish is in the chair, our producer. Gabby T will be answering your calls. And thank you for your support, for listening to the program, for telling others about the conversations we have. If you're listening to the podcast, thank you for doing that. And especially for giving a gift to the program to keep us going. We are listener supported, and our thank you this month is a classic. It's a hardbound, beautifully illustrated copy of Philip Keller's A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. I have heard about this book just about all of my life, and I'd never really dipped into it. I've heard it mentioned in messages. You know, a pastor would mention this and think about this. But I never held a copy in my hands until now. And I encountered this today, stopped me in my tracks. He's talking, Philip Keller's talking about what it means to follow Jesus fully and the emancipation from self when we take up our cross, when we put others ahead of our own needs. He writes, he who has no sense of self-importance cannot be offended or deflated. Such people enjoy a wholesome outlook of carefree abandon that makes their Christian life contagious with contentment. And I looked at that, I thought, I got to read that about five times and let it sink in, because he's right. These are life-changing comparisons of the committed love of God for you and me, the committed love of the Good Shepherd, and then our response as the sheep of his pasture. Give a gift today. I'd love to send you a copy of this. We only have 1 week left in April. Can you believe that? Call 866-95-FABRY. Give a gift of any size. We'll send it to you. 866-953-2279. Or if it's easier for you, just go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org, F-A-B-R-Y, chrisfabrylive.org. Only 1 week left. Thanks for your support. Dr. Laurel Shaler is a national certified counselor, licensed marriage and family therapist, licensed professional counselor, licensed social worker. She's a professor at Liberty University in the Department of Counselor Education and Family Studies. She's written Relational Reset, Unlearning the Habits That Hold You Back. Boy, that's a good one. Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events, and our featured resource today, Loving Adopted Children Well, a 5 Love Languages Approach. You can find it at chrisfabrylive.org. Click through today's information. You'll see it right there. Dr. Shaler, welcome to the program. So excited to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
One of the answers to the question that I posed at the beginning, you know, how can we help you as an adoptive parent? You said, as an adoptive parent yourself, a lot of times non-adoptive parents don't understand. They don't get what adoptive parents are going through. Talk about that.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's kind of an important statement to make, that it's not implying that non-adoptive parents don't want to understand, but like with many things in life, if you haven't been through something yourself, it's really difficult to understand. And everybody's journey is going to be a little different. So of course, each adoptive family, they're going to have their own journeys and their own stories, and they're not going to be identical. But what I have found in my experience is that sometimes a child will be going through something, and as their parent, you know that there's something about their adoption story that's playing a role. And a well-meaning friend might say something like, oh, all kids go through that, or all kids think that, or say that, or do that. And sometimes that's true, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes we know, like, no, this is really because of this factor, or, you know, for example, maybe they were exposed to something in their bio mom's womb, and that's had an impact on them, or maybe they had some prior abuse, and so this is what makes them more prone to be jumpy or nervous if somebody wants to come and give them a hug or something like that. And so just recognizing that families who have adopted, like, we have a different journey than non-adoptive families. And it's not to say that parents who are raising bio kids have an easy time, because parenting is just flat out hard. So it's not like it's easy for anybody, but it's just different.
Is the adoptive parent journey different from the vision that most parents going into it have? Meaning, adoption is a complex thing to go through just to be have a child available, you know, to be able to adopt. You have the forms and all that. But a lot of parents think this is what's going to happen and here's how it's going to look. And then they get a couple to 10 years, you know, into the process. It's like, no, it's not what I expected. Is that true?
Absolutely. And I think one place that's particularly true is when you adopt a newborn or a very young child, and you have this idea that because they were adopted so young, that everything will be perfectly fine. It'll be like raising your own biological child. And then oftentimes what happens is you start to realize it's not the same. You said something like all adoption is complex. I think that was the word you used, and it's so true. I always say that adoption is a place where joy and sorrow meet, because even if you take a newborn baby home from the hospital, there has still been the trauma of losing the attachment to the biological mother, the mother whose womb you grew in for all those months, and now you're not with that woman. You're not hearing her heartbeat. You're not with that familiarity. And so there's always trauma when you come to a place of adoption. So it's really important to consider that.
You know what that makes me think of is the song about the crucifixion. You said joy and sorrow meet.
Yes.
And the song is sorrow and love flowed mingled down. You know, when Jesus did that for us, it was his love, but poured out for us with the sorrow that the crucifixion brought, and the pain and the struggle. So if you're thinking adoption's going to be just the wonderful, beautiful thing and no problems whatsoever, smooth sailing, you're probably not going to find that. But there is that joy that comes from giving of yourself and from welcoming that child into your family. You've experienced that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm an adoptive mom. My husband and I have adopted 3 children, 2 by traditional adoption and 1 by embryo adoption. So I am her birth mother and her adoptive mother, but not her biological mother. So that's a mouthful, and never thought I would say that, but that's what the Lord brought us to. And we've absolutely experienced joy in this process. And I'll never forget the moments the 3 times I laid eyes for the first time on these precious kiddos. And I'll just cherish those moments forever. And we've had many, many joyous moments since then.
The embryo adoption, what was your desire there? Was this something that you did because, boy, you know, these children are being sometimes destroyed or frozen and left in perpetuity? I want to be a parent that way. What was the process?
Yeah. So we had, like I said, we had adopted 2 children. They were both young. We met one at 2 months and one at 3 days old. Mm-hmm. And we had a boy and a girl, and we thought our family is complete. And I actually remember a good friend of mine asking me if we would adopt again. And I just emphatically said, no, we're done. And 2 months later, the Lord said, no, you're not. And it was very clear as any calling I've ever had in my life, that we were to open our home again to another child. And I wasn't exactly sure what that would look like. And as we began praying, he brought embryo adoption to mind. And I have to tell you that it was so strongly from the Lord. It's not like I saw it advertised. I didn't have a friend that was going through it at the time. There wasn't any specific reason that this came to me, except because this was the call that God placed on our lives. And so we fervently prayed and sought information and answers for a year. And it was just abundantly clear that we were supposed to go through that. And yes, there are like 1.5 million frozen embryos in America. And not all of those are available to be adopted, but some of them are. And otherwise, they're going to be frozen forever, or they're going to be destroyed. So we definitely believe that that they're lives that deserve an opportunity to move forward. And so we were blessed by a couple who chose to place this embryo for adoption rather than have it destroyed. And it, of course, is our daughter. So it's a her. And she is just a sweet little 4-month-old baby.
Wow. Oh, Dr. Shaler, thank you for telling that story, because it's going to, I think that's one of the things about Christian radio that is the most wonderful thing. It opens your eyes to the things that you didn't even know were out there. And maybe there's somebody listening right here who heard that and is saying, you know what? I'm being called to that. That's my next question. We'll get to it after we take a break. Is adoption a calling from God on your life? Dr. Laurel Shaler has written, along with Dr. Gary Chapman, Loving Adopted Children Well, a 5 Love Languages Approach. You'll see it as our featured resource at chrisfabrylive.org. I'm going to open the phone lines too, 877-548-3675. If you're in this group of adoptive parents, you have a question, comment, 877-548-3675. We're talking with Dr. Laurel Shaler about Loving Adopted Children Well. It's a book that she's written along with Dr. Gary Chapman. It's a 5 Love Languages approach. Very helpful. And if you go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org, click through today's information, you'll see it right there. chrisfabrylive.org. So I tip my hand. Is adoption a calling? Do you have to have a call? Do you have to hear God's voice saying you need to know? Or is it something else?
Well, I don't know that we will hear that audible voice of you have to adopt, but I do think that we're going to sense this from him, that he's going to instill in us a desire, and if you're married, a mutual desire to adopt. And we know that his word tells us to care for orphans. So the call is there for all of us. It's just how he individually wants us to respond. So we have to be prayerful and obedient to how he wants us each to respond to that.
Is part of loving an adopted child well, how do I say this? Keeping the adoption, keeping the A word from them for a certain point, or do you bring that up? For example, when will you tell your embryo adopted child about what happened with her?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I believe that it just needs to be woven into their story, and so that there's never a time that they remember learning for the first time that they were adopted. They're going to learn details as they get older and as they develop and have more questions. They're going to learn more and more. But I just want them to just know. Now, I have a 7-year-old. She knows that she was adopted. And she's able to tell you that. Our 4-year-old still doesn't really understand. So I can talk about adoption. You know, for example, if we're talking about Moses and I say, Moses was adopted like you were adopted, and we can talk about what adoption is, he still doesn't really get it. But I'm going to be telling them from the time that they're very, very young about their story. So I hope the same for the baby, that there's not a time that she goes, oh, I didn't know that I was adopted until I was XYZ age. I just want that to be a natural part of their story, not the whole of their story, but a part of it.
And there will come a point when they ask questions, and maybe already the 7-year-old already has, what about my birth mom? You know, what about her, my dad, my birth father? How do you handle those questions, especially when they're young?
Yeah, so I think you have to answer honestly at an age-appropriate, developmental stage-appropriate way. So I'm not necessarily going to go into all the details if it might be too overwhelming or upsetting. At the same time, I'm not going to withhold everything because there's a natural curiosity. I would want to know too. And I want to give her information. And I find that she's very insightful and very intelligent. So when she has a question, she's been mulling on that. She really wants to know the answer. So then we talk about the answers. And each adoption is so unique. My children are not biologically related to one another. So they each have a different bio mom and dad. And so talking with them about some of those differences and helping them to understand that each of their stories is going to be different. And also helping my older children to understand the embryo adoption. So again, my son wasn't quite able to understand it, but my daughter, we read a book and we talked quite a bit about embryo adoption, and she has been very fascinated by it. And she has really, really loved that, having that child added to our family. But my son, he's been thrilled about the baby. And he will tell people, "Mommy went to the hospital and had surgery to have a baby," but he doesn't understand that the baby was an embryo adoption.
Right. Don't you wish you had this resource when you were going through all this, all the adoption process?
Well, I think that's kind of how it started. I was reading the Five Love Language for Children book, and I loved it. And I thought it was wonderful by Dr. Chapman and his co-author, Ross Campbell. And I thought it was wonderful. But I also thought as I read it, wouldn't it be helpful to have examples from families who have adopted? I think that there are some unique things that we experience that it would be helpful for other families to know about. Families currently adopting or who have adopted, but also those who are considering adopting, and a third category of people who know and love those who have adopted. Because I think it can help if you have some insight as to how this process works and maybe how you can better engage and be more helpful to those families who have adopted.
I want to get into that. I want to get into the differences between loving a child well using the five love languages and loving an adopted child well. Let me give you the number again if you want to talk with Dr. Laurel Shaler today. And we'd love to know, what is it that would be most helpful for you on your adoptive parent journey? Is there, do you feel isolated in some ways, or that the people around you don't get it, or you'd love to have some help and you don't get that? 877-548-3675 is our number. Susan is listening in Florida. Hey, Susan, go right ahead.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call. And Laurel, I wish I had your book when we first adopted, but I you know, that call of God on your life and just the certainty that this was meant to be. We were up for adoption and they only had two families. And we were considering twins, but the birth mom didn't choose us. And I said, "We're going to put butterflies, these like 3D butterflies in our profile now. And the birth mom's going to see these and she's going to choose us." And she wrote us a letter and she said, that's why she chose us. So I know for a fact that that's what it was. It was a total God thing. But one of the things when you adopt is you think everything's going to be perfect and you just never know. And our son was diagnosed with autism when he was 2.5 years old. So it's been a hard road, but I know that this was meant to be.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. I completely resonate with what you're saying, that even when it's hard, we can rest in the knowledge that this is exactly where we're supposed to be and that God has formed our family the way it's supposed to be formed.
Susan, is there any sense in your adoptive parent journey that you felt, I'm such a failure because this happened, or I wish I hadn't done that? Have you gone through some of those feelings?
Well, even now, I mean, that whole thing with my son had many, many ear infections when he was a baby, and he was our first child. And I didn't know about ear tubes, and he was on many, many antibiotics. And so I'm like, oh, was it the microbiome? Is that why he developed autism? And we still do that. I mean, we just had that conversation last week. But I just have to rest in the Lord and know that he has a plan and a purpose for my boy's life. I mean, my boy is an honor roll, but his main challenge is that he has, you know, social, it's hard for him socially, and he doesn't have any friends. But I just have to keep believing that there's a plan, that God has a plan for him, that it's just right for him.
Isn't that the hardest thing for a parent when your child struggles, especially with friendships? You know, great. It's great when you have kids that are, you know, the social butterflies, and there are problems with that as well. But for a child who is a little more alone, or almost feeds on that aloneness sometimes, and you hurt and you long for them to have a friend. Dr. Shaler, talk about that.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking through that, and I totally agree with how painful that can be when you have a child that's suffering. You just want to make things all better for them, and you want their life to go the way that you think it should go. But ultimately, and that's what Susan was saying as well, that God is in control and God has a plan for each of our lives. And I think that there's ways that we can try and connect our children with other children that may need a friend. But sometimes it's not always possible, but we can just do our very best to try and cultivate those relationships. And sometimes that comes out of support with other adoptive families. So one of the things that I try to be intentional about is, creating opportunities for my children to be with other children who have been adopted so that they can know and see that they're not alone, especially for my older child who understands it more. There's something more special for her about being with other people who have also been adopted, because it just is, again, it's just a reminder to her that she's not the only one. She right. loves hearing stories about adoption because it really helps her to feel less isolated.
Susan, thanks for calling today. If you go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org, you'll see the book written by Dr. Laurel Shaler and Dr. Gary Chapman, which is titled Loving Adopted Children Well, A Five Love Languages Approach, which takes me to the five love languages. I don't have time to go through everything, but if you don't know, acts of service, gifts, physical touch, quality time, and words of affirmation, those are the five ways of speaking love to other people. So I want to know from you, what unique ways can you use these five love languages with an adoptive child that's different from a biological child?
Yeah, so one of the first things that comes to my mind is related to physical touch. So we know that sometimes children from hard places, Karen Purvis out of Texas Christian University, she coined that term, children from hard places or kids from hard places. And that oftentimes includes a child who has maybe come out of a home that's been abusive or neglectful. And so there are times when a kiddo just is not receptive to touch because they've been touched in a harmful way or because they're just not used to being touched. So taking things slowly, learning how to be mindful. I mean, because you can't just say, well, they don't want to be touched, so we're never going to touch forever and ever. Amen. There's just too much support that points us to the benefit of touch. But we want to approach it in a way that feels comfortable for that child. Somebody shared with me not long ago about their kid who would love foot rubs right before bed. She had trouble getting to sleep, and one night her mom rubbed her feet and she got so relaxed and cozy and went to sleep. And the next night she said, "Hey mom, can you rub my feet again tonight?" So she didn't like any other touch. She didn't want to be hugged or any of those other things, but she could stand for her feet to be rubbed. So I think just getting creative with how we approach them with physical touch, keeping in mind that their background might impact the way that they want to be touched.
And to be able then to be okay with that too, because I think if the parent really wants the child to warm up to them and to see progress, then you can get frustrated if you pat them on the back and they kind of move away or put your arm around them. But I wonder if I think one of the most intimate things that you can do with a child is to read to them. And let's say the child doesn't like touch and they're sitting as a young child, you want to see the pictures, you know, and as an older person, I want to see the pictures too. So you're holding this book in your hand and you've got the child who's sitting maybe a foot away from you and you're reading this and you're kind of tipping it so that they can see it, and they just kind of inch a little bit closer to you. That can be to the parent who really wants that physical contact and to say, I love you. Just inching toward you from the child, it means the difference, makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think we have to remember that we want to demonstrate all five love languages to our children, but in time, we'll start to see if we're really observant that they lean towards one or maybe two love languages, and we can really kind of hone in on demonstrating love to them in those specific ways more often. But we never want to neglect any of them. I'll tell you kind of an interesting story. I was actually listening to Dr. Chapman yesterday share about the five love languages in the workplace. And one of the things he talked about was when they were writing that book, there was, you know, like kind of this pushback against physical touch. Oh no, we're in the workplace, we don't want to do physical touch. And he said, but we can't just ignore this entire category. Now, this is not going to be anybody's primary love language in the workplace, but there are times when somebody might really appreciate a handshake or a high five or a fist bump or whatever, just as a demonstration of the way that they're going to appreciate the connection. So we can't ignore connection. We just got to work on being mindful of how we approach it.
Our featured resource at chrisfabrylive.org is Loving Adopted Children Well. You'll see it right there. And if you have a question or a comment, 877-548-3675. More straight ahead. Talking about loving your adopted children well today, and adoption is such a life-giving gift by the birth mother for the child and the adoptive parents. But in today's culture, it's a whole lot easier for someone with an unplanned pregnancy to go the route of abortion. That's where CareNet comes in. They are there to counsel, to give options, support, and tangible help to the women and men who are making a hard decision. If you click the green CareNet button at chrisfabrylive.org, you'll see a resource titled Making Life Disciples. CareNet wants to bring their pro-abundant life ministry to your church. They'll help your church establish a team that can walk alongside women and men who are facing pregnancy decisions, who are in your congregation, and form meaningful partnerships with your local pregnancy centers. Your church can become a life house, a lighthouse for life. Find out more, click the green CareNet button at chrisfabrylive.org. If you've been wondering, how can I put my pro-life commitment into action? Maybe this is a good step for you. Go there today, click the green CareNet button at chrisfabrylive.org. Dr. Laurel Shaler has written, along with Dr. Gary Chapman, Loving Adopted Children Well, a Five Love Languages Approach. And if you have a question or a comment, 877-548-3675. One of the questions that we had from a listener is, why is there a differentiation between adoptive parenting and biological parenting? Both are parents. Why does the adopted parent, why is that parent called adoptive and not just parent?
Well, I so appreciate this question because I'm actually pretty passionate about this. I 100% agree. The parent is the parent. I have changed countless diapers. I bathe my children. I take care of them when they're sick. I mean, I'm their mama. So the only reason that we use that term, adoptive parent, is simply for clarification's sake. Throughout the book or in an interview, I'm just using that to make it clear who we're talking about and who we're talking to. But in real life, I definitely would want to just be called parent. So if I had a friend that was introducing me and my children to somebody, I would not want them to say, here's Laurel and her adopted children. I would just want her to say, here's Laurel and her children. So great question. Thanks for asking that.
Yeah. And there are so many permutations of that then. They then trickle down to, you know, letting the child know, but you've already said this is part of their story, so you don't hide that. And you probably heard the horror stories of children who find out a long time later in their life that, you know, these people who raised him or her were not their biological parents, and that presents some difficulties for them in adulthood.
Oh, absolutely. I have a dear friend. She was one of those individuals that happened to. She didn't find out until she was a teenager, and it was extremely difficult to walk through that journey. I mean, you think about, you have this idea of your life and of your past, and then you come to find out that there's this whole other background, and even your very DNA is not who you thought you were. And so there can be a real challenge in that. So yes, we don't not say adoptive parent because we're ashamed, but because we become their parents. One of my favorite moments in my life was when the judge in our first adoption, when he said, you know, you are now and forevermore this child's parents, and he banged the gavel and said, it is so ordered. And I just always, those words have just reverberated in my mind and heart so many times. It is so ordered. So I became a mother in that moment, and it was a beautiful moment. So I think we want to definitely be sensitive to parents and recognizing that when we say adoptive parent, it's not because it's a secret or a stigma or to hide it, but just to recognize and acknowledge that you have then become the parent.
Yes.
Without disregarding the biological or birth parents.
So let it be written, so let it be done. I think somebody famous said that as well. But that feeling of, it was like, this is not only recognized by God and by you and your husband. This is somebody with authority who's saying, this is you. This is your responsibility now. That has to be something you'll never forget.
Yes, definitely. And the gravity of the situation really hits you in that moment that this is your child and you are now their parent forevermore. And it's a really beautiful moment, but it's a real responsibility.
With Dr. Laurel Shaler, here is Laura. Hi, Laura. Go right ahead.
Hello. My question is, I have an adoptive child, and she's 16, and at 18, we've always said, you know, we can find your birth parents, but we've felt through her life that's, you know, something really special she's looking forward to, that she hasn't really felt that connected to our family. When we first adopted her, and other people were telling me about their adoption story, they talked about reactive attachment disorder. And I wanted to ask you, how significant does that play into it? Even though we've had her from birth, you know, like you talked in the womb, like there's chemicals that are happening in that baby that maybe that detachment is always there.
Great question.
Yes, that is a good question. So with reactive attachment disorder, it's usually a result of insufficient care. So when a child comes to you out of an environment where they had insufficient care, you know, they may not seek you for comfort, or they may not respond to your comfort even when they're distressed. They may not have positive moods. They may be irritable, sad, afraid, even during like non-threatening interactions with their caregivers. It could be that there's some rad there. I think it's more common when the child has come out of an abusive or neglectful home. But certainly, even just the very act, Nancy Verrier called the primal wound, the initial act of being removed from the bio mother, is in and of itself a trauma. And so it certainly could be that. But there's hope, because there is the possibility of developing a secure attachment. And so there's a variety of ways of doing that, you know, co-regulating with your child whenever, even though she's a teenager, that doesn't mean that you can't go back and do some things that could be healing for her. I don't know if the two of you have ever sought counseling together, or if you're married with your husband, if there's been family counseling. But I would be focusing on trying to increase the secure attachment so that she feels like she has a home base in you.
Increase the secure attachment. That sounds like it could take a long time, though. And if she's coming up on 18, again, and a lot of parents will say, well, the teenager, you know, most of the work is done. I can't do anything. You're saying no, you can have an effect on that child.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think it's ever too late. Even as adults, we can still continue to work on developing secure attachment. And the first priority has to be our relationship with God. Like if we're securely attached with Him, then we can start to see His design for us in other relationships and we can work on it from there.
Yeah. Laura, does that help? Would you hang on? I want Tricia to send you a copy of this. I think it might help you in right where you are today, or maybe in some other area. Loving Adopted Children Well, a 5 Love Languages Approach. So you hang on and Tricia will get your information. The struggle here is, well, it's not a struggle. It's how do you love a child well, for example, with words? And I'm wondering the difference between a biological child and words of affirmation and an adoptive child with words of affirmation. It seems like they would be the same to me, but maybe not. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. So again, there are going to be some similarities between the way that we communicate with the child who is biological versus a child who is adopted. But I think it's important to consider what that child may have, going back to the example of a child who has been in a different home prior to yours. What kind of words have they heard in the past? Have they heard words, kind words, some of the time, and other times they've heard harsh words and they get mixed messages? Or maybe they've learned that if they're really, you know, sweet and kind to you, then maybe they won't have some abusive action taken towards them. So when we look at how words were used in their prior environment, that's going to help determine how we're going to use it in their present environment. But also the very idea that each child is looking for a place to belong. And so how can we use our words to encourage even that child that was adopted from birth that you belong here? That there may be times when you feel different or when you feel like maybe this isn't where you're supposed to be, but that God has called you into this particular family for a reason and you belong here. And so we can use these words of affirmation to help bolster that child up so that they feel connected to the parent.
That kind of connection, that's exactly what it is right there. Dr. Laurel Shaler is our guest today. Loving Adopted Children Well, the 5 Love Languages Approach is our featured resource. You can find it at chrisfabrylive.org. Click through today's information. You'll see it right there at chrisfabrylive.org. Our remaining moments with Dr. Shaler straight ahead on Moody Radio. What a great resource for adoptive parents. If you go to chrisfabrylive.org, you'll see, a click through today's information, you'll see Loving Adopted Children Well, 5 Love Languages Approach, written by Dr. Gary Chapman, along with Dr. Laurel Shaler. And again, you can find more at the website, chrisfabrylive.org. Kathy's on the line. Kathy, your question or comment?
Well, hi there, and thank you. We have 2 adopted children that we fostered for 6 years, and then we adopted when they were 9 and 7. They're now 18 and 20. The 20-year-old is in a rehab away from home here, and I really don't know how I'm going to love her when she comes back home. Her treatment isn't exactly done yet until the end of next week, and she's threatening to come home. And she's wants to get into a profession that would not be good for a person who is an addict. But I don't know how to accept her back into our home and just hope and pray that she stays well and she does the treatment that they've been giving her. But it, from what it sounds like, it doesn't seem like she's doing very much with the program. So how can I bring somebody into my home, back into my home, when they have a substance abuse? And it's just going to be very hard, because not only that, is her brother is on the spectrum, but he's very highly functioning. but he has seen her come in and out of our home, and I don't want this to keep happening to him.
Kathy, I can hear it in your voice. I'm so sorry that you're going through this, but I can hear in your voice just that I really want to love well, but I don't know what that looks like here. So, Dr. Shaler, I know you don't have all the answers for everything, but what would you say to Kathy?
Yeah, I also hear that in Kathy's voice. And I think the reality is it's clear that you do love your child. And sometimes love looks like boundaries. So without all of the details, it's hard for me to give specific advice. But I do think that you should consider what boundaries you have to put in place to guard yourself and to guard the child that is still remaining in your home.
Yeah. Kathy, anything else? Any follow-up to that?
I don't know if I can have her come back in the home. I actually don't, to be honest, don't want her to come back.
Yeah.
And that may sound bad.
For safety issues, for, like you say, with your other children, for yourself, maybe?
Yeah. For myself, because it's going to cause a rift in our marriage, and it's going to be hard on her brother, who's going to have to watch this happen again and us asking her to leave again. And it's really hard.
And then the guilt, you know, if she doesn't come back home, where's she going to go? And she probably is going to go to places where she, you know, she'll have the opportunity to use again, you know? So you feel like, well, it's all your fault. You know, you could chase yourself down that rabbit trail a long time and feel guilty about, you know, whatever decision you make. It's almost like there's a no-win situation here, but there is a way, Dr. Shaler, to stand true to, I want safety. I want to protect this home here. So maybe part of the answer is to find a safe place for that daughter to go instead of the home where she's got a chance, to not use, to be in some place, you know, an extended family member. What do you think, Dr. Shaler?
Yeah, absolutely. There are other options that could be considered, and it could be that coming into your home at a later point in her life is still on the table if there are certain criteria that can be met. But there also comes a time when children, there still are children, but they're also adults. And so they have to take responsibility and ownership for their own choices and behaviors and the consequences of those behaviors. And so if it's not safe for her to come back, then the most loving thing that you can do is to honor that and to be mindful of the rest of the family members. There's a saying in counseling, it's that you don't sacrifice a group for one person. So we have to really be mindful of, well, how is this going to impact everybody in this home? And if it's not going to be safe and healthy for everyone, it may be that the most loving thing you can do is to try to find a place that is going to be healthy for her.
Kathy, one more question for you, and you intimated this a little, and I don't want to dig too far. If you don't want to talk about it, you just tell me. But it sounds like you and your husband may be on different pages to a certain extent with that, you know, with what's going to happen here in the future. Is that safe to say?
Actually, we're on the same page.
Good.
And I'm happy.
Good.
About that.
Yes. So you both agree.
It's really hard on him.
Yes. Okay. So you both agree that this is not the best thing for your family right now. So that's helpful because that was another question I had, Dr. Shaler, when, you know, even in adoption, you can have one parent that's pushing for this and the other parent says, well, okay. You know, you both need to be on the same page through all of this, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's parenting isn't easy, even when there's a like-minded couple. But sometimes you have a couple where there's different approaches. And, you know, I speak from some experience here. I share in the book about how, you know, my husband was raised by a Marine. He was a sailor himself. And so he has a different mentality than maybe I do. And so when we look at, okay, how can we work together as a team and form like a united front so our children are getting consistent messaging? We can still be different. We can still parent different, but we still have to have some coming together, meeting of the mind, so to speak, so that our children don't try and play off of one of us or the other one of us. And we can say, you know, as I'm sure we've both heard in our lives, Chris, like, well, what did your dad say? Or what did your mom say? Because sometimes they'll ask something of one and then they'll go to the other one looking for a different answer. So that's just a really simple example. But we do want to work together and have a united parenting.
Which takes me back to Kathy's question. I wonder if getting support from other outside, you know, from the family, from the extended family, but also from the church or people in Kathy's sphere who have gone through something like this, how did they handle it so that she and her husband don't feel all alone? How do you get support?
Absolutely. And thankfully, there are more and more resources. I think it sounds like, Kathy, maybe a day or a weekend away at a conference would be super helpful for you. There's many different options out there. Maybe something even in your own community. I know that in my area, there are even churches that have their own adoption conferences, or some of them have simulcast of some of the bigger conferences that take place. So I think just getting that support and not trying to do this all on your own. And it might be that you pursue a counselor that might be able to help you walk through some of these questions.
Yes. And if your daughter won't go, you know, a family situation, then you go and you and your husband go for some of that help and some of that support. That's really good. Kathy, hang on. I want to get your information, because my guess is there are some people around the country who've heard your story and are going to be praying for you. And there might be a parent who has walked through this who says, here's the book that I read, or here's, you know, the conference that I went to, or this really helped me. So I'll have Tricia get your information so that we can contact you again if that happens. We've covered an awful lot here, Dr. Shaler. There's so much we didn't cover in the book, Loving Adopted Children Well, A 5 Love Languages Approach. Dr. Shaler, thanks for your wisdom and insight, and come back and see us again, okay?
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Laurel Shaler, you've heard from her, as well as Dr. Gary Chapman, because they together wrote the book Loving Adopted Children Well, A 5 Love Languages Approach. It's our featured resource. If you go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org. You can also support us there. You can find out more about CareNet. Click the green button today, and a whole lot more right there, chrisfabrylive.org. Our program is a production of Moody Radio, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks a lot for listening. Again, the website, chrisfabrylive.org. Hope you can join us tomorrow right here.